This is the Alien UFO Podcast, episode 209. Now I'm your host, Simon Bowne. And you can enjoy the extended version of this episode ad-free, along with over 200 hours of extended episodes on Patreon. This week, I'm talking to Brett Oldham about his book, Children of the Greys: Aftermath. Brett is a well-known alien abductee and paranormal investigator. He is featured on national television in the United States and numerous other television programs worldwide. Hi, Brett. Thanks a lot for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Simon. It's a pleasure to be here.
We're going to talk about your book. It's called Children of the Greys: Aftermath. There was a sentence that stood out to me in the book that said, "The idea of alien-humid hybrid race is not new." So how far back would you say it goes?
I mean, there's evidence it goes back millennia, but I think that they've been perfecting it over the years. The depiction of the first book that I did, the first Children of the Greys, my brother Jeffrey Oldham is an artist, and he did that depiction of the small hybrid child that I had written about in that book, of having interacted with, and could have possibly been mine. I don't know for sure, but I do think it probably was, given the way that I felt during the interaction. And it made such a profound effect on just people, like literally all over the world, because I've been fortunate enough to had media attention all over the world. And so I've had people from all different countries reach out to me, and it really affect their psyche, you know, seeing the depiction of that little girl. And a lot of mothers and stuff, women would say that they felt that they had also experienced hybrid children that look like that. And then, you know, and there's things that the show Ancient Aliens obviously has featured things like that, you know, where it could go back hundreds and hundreds of years. And I do think that the Greys themselves have the ability to manipulate time because, you know, we're dealing with species, alien species that have technology way, way far beyond our understanding. And I know I keep seeing articles all the time about quantum physics and stuff that we're slowly acclimating to and being able to do. But these guys are so far ahead of us. So, I mean, given that, it could go way, way back. But it does seem like that it has advanced to the point where, just like the depiction on the new book, some people have noticed it and some people haven't, but it is actually the same little girl, hybrid girl, as an adult, because I went for years wanting to see her again, because it was just that particular thing was a one-time experience, but it made such a profound effect on me that I knew if I ever went public with my story, that I wanted an image of her on the cover. Because I think that's one of the main reasons that the Greys are here is for the hybrid program. You know, it's been talked about a lot, but their race, I think, maybe can't reproduce anymore. They're interested in us as physical specimens, mentally, obviously not. They're so far ahead of us that that aspect I think they have covered, but we're a good physical specimen. I mean, their bodies are atrophied. They're small, and so that's quite a combination. If you mix our bodies with their intellect and maybe even their spiritual beliefs, you know, you really could create quite a impressive new species. So I understand. You know, that's probably why they've been doing it with people of the Earth. But the species themselves, the new picture, the new depiction that I have on after the Children of the Greys Aftermath was I did get to meet her again. They finally let me see her again. And that's what she looked like. I created this image that's on the new book. And it was amazing to me when I did have the experience. I'd been taken and they had kind of deviated from the norm of what usually happens during these experiences. And I was just sitting at what I call these intake table things. And they had dressed me in these tight fitting, dark, like black outfits, uniform type thing. Sometimes they do that. Sometimes they just leave you nude. They rarely leave your clothing on that you had on while you were taking. But it was strange because I wasn't surrounded by any of the small grays, and I was just sitting on sort of like when you go to a regular physician here. You know, you're sitting on the end of the table that you lay on, or, you know, whatever you call those in a doctor's office. And I could see, it was kind of open in the room I was in, and I could see like down this sort of open air hallway into an open area with a lot of like equipment, sophisticated equipment stuff. And I saw this figure walking toward me, and as it got closer, I could see that it was a female hybrid. And then it kind of started coming into my mind, like, you know, she was by herself, which was strange. And she was dressed, she wasn't dressed in, she was dressed in the uniform. It wasn't like, I've seen them before, and they were wearing like these sort of white, loose fitting garments. So she seemed to be like some official capacity. And when she approached me and we started having a exchange, and, you know, she had asked me if I knew who she was. And then I knew instantly then that it was really her. And it was just remarkable. It was a very short experience. You know, I write about it in the book, but and that's almost one of the main reasons that I decided to come out with a second extending the story of Children of the Greys, because not only had a lot happened to me since the first book came out in 2013, that I felt people should know about, but you know, I kind of, when this one, when I did decide to go ahead and talk about everything that had happened, I knew 100% I had to put her on there. And she actually told me her name. I asked, before she left, I asked what her name was. But, you know, she started to walk away, and I said, "Wait, I want to know your name. I've never known your name." And then, of course, we were communicating telepathically, and she said, "As you will understand it," and she didn't speak, but she put letters, she spelled it out in my mind, like I saw letters, and it was A-Y-A, like Aya. And so I knew, like, when I decided to go ahead and write Aftermath, that I was going to put her on the cover. So the first book has her as a small toddler, you know, when I first encountered her and saw her. And this book is her grown. And funnily enough, you know, she looks like very close that she could blend in with society today.
Did she have affection for you? Or was it just seem like she's just doing a job? They said to her, "You've got to go and say hello to this bloke." And she wasn't that interested.
It was kind of both. She said she couldn't stay long. So it was sort of a short interchange. But at the same time, she didn't seem, you know, the grays are emotionless. And I mean, they're not wired like us. So, you know, that's what people don't understand about the whole phenomenon. You know, we're dealing with a completely different life form. But, and that's one of the things that they're fascinated with us is the emotional aspect of that we have that they don't, because they're creating these hybrids that are born with that part of human genetic makeup. And so they have to study us and put us through these kind of mental experiments. Everybody thinks everything is just something to do with probing our bodies and stuff. And I mean, they've got that figured out. They've been doing that for years and years and years. It's the mental aspect that especially emotional aspects, what triggers us, what makes us laugh, cry, you know. And one thing that I did notice about her was like she smiled, you know, like I'd never seen that before. So she seemed pleased. And she said she remembered me, you know, so I had made that kind of impression. And I don't know what they had told her who I was. But once again, it kind of made me believe that she was mine, for me to have the same kind of effect on her all these years as she did on me. So, you know, she seemed genuine, like she was happy to see me. And she did say it, that she wasn't allowed to talk to me for very long, you know. So I think they were, it was kind of part of her job, like you said, but at the same time, I think she was happy to be doing it.
Do you think they introduced you to her in the first place to monitor you and watch what your emotions are and how you reacted?
Exactly, Simon. That's exactly what I was going to say. After I thought about it, and they let me remember it, you know, which some things, they will do that on purpose. They will let you remember stuff. Other things, they try to wipe it. It's always there. And I tell people that all the time. It's always in your subconscious. It's just, it's your subconscious a lot of times just protecting you from the memory, because a lot of these things are traumatic. But in that case, I woke up remembering the experience. So they let me remember it on purpose. But I do think that that was a big factor in it, that they actually wanted to see my reaction to it. You know, I've been implanted, no doubt about it. And so they can use these implants to monitor you at any given time. So they knew that all these years, that was a question, that I always wondered, what happened to her? You know, where is she now? How is she? What does she look like? All these things, it always bothered me. And so they knew that. I think you're exactly right. They were monitoring my emotional reaction to it. And who knows, maybe they were just, after all of these years and everything I have done for them, maybe they were just doing me a favor. You know, I doubt that, but I still try to be open to that possibility.
So do you have a relationship with these ETs in any way? Or is it just they treat you like a lab rat?
It's a little of both. You know, most of the time, there's actually two levels of the grays that I'm dealing with, and I think is the most common. There's the small grays that's depicted all throughout media, and that everybody thinks that's exactly all there is. The small grays are just biological robots. That's the way I said. You know, they're biological life forms, but they're created, their clones are created by the tall grays. All the small grays, their communication is limited. It's almost like they're programmed what to say. You know, we won't hurt you. You know, just cooperate. It's going to be okay. All this really condescending stuff, actually, after a while. And they carry out a lot of the work on whatever kind of experiments and stuff that they're going to do. But there's a tall grays that's the real grays. And it's a whole different thing with them. They're clearly in control. They dress differently. You know, everybody thinks the small grays run around naked. They don't. I mean, they do. It's almost like military. They do have uniform type things. The tall grays, I've never seen in a uniform type thing. They wear robe type deals, like clothing. They look very similar to the small grays, but they're taller. I mean, I'm almost 6'4", and they're taller than me. But they will communicate. I, as far as a relationship, like you ask, you can't really have a relationship, in my opinion, with the small grays, because they're just programmed, you know. I mean, it's hive mentality. They respond to logic. If you do something, and I figured this out over the years, if you do something that's illogical, it actually scares them. They'll back away. They don't know how to react, because they're not programmed on how to react. The tall grays, it's a different story. So I have had, from the very beginning, a communication, the very first time that I was taken, which is one of the most traumatic events, you know, because my event started at 5 years old. And I had no idea at that time. I mean, it was very, very traumatic, what was happening. And, you know, I was never exposed to any kind of talk or TV shows or anything that had alien. We were just like poor country people. I lived out in in the states of Southern Illinois, farmland. I mean, there was not even streetlights, where we were at when this first happened. And we just had some old black and white TV, and I hardly ever even watched it. So I was never exposed. So you can imagine the shock of first seeing these things when I was first taken. And one of the things that they did was they had taken me to an area of this craft, and they set me down. There were several of them, and it was sort of these, like, this little rounded area of the craft where there was some benches, and they were kind of layered. And everything that I've noticed in crafts is always built into the craft itself, and with very rounded edges. And that was the first time I was exposed to a tall gray. And it was almost like the good cop, bad cop thing, you know. It was like the little guys took me in, and I was just petrified. And the tall gray started communicating with me at that time, even at 5 years old, and was trying to assure me and comfort me in whatever way, you know, that's possible for them, and sort of develop that kind of relationship. And even to this day, if like I've had questions, and if there's ever going to be any answers, which they decide how much they're going to tell you, but it will be through communication with the tall gray, you know. So there is sort of that kind of relationship with the tall grays, you know, that's way different than the smaller ones.
Do you feel that you're meeting with a certain faction, a certain group of the grays, and there are other groups that treat humans differently? They may be a group that's not friendly with the group that you're meeting with.
I think so. I think there's more than the grays that's visiting here on our planet. And I think that the grays, there's a hierarchy exist between different species, and they're all here for different reasons. But I think within the grays, I hated him for years. And if anybody that read the first book would probably back that up, because of the way I came across in that book, you know, I was very bitter and angry until as I got older and got more of an understanding. And so it's a little softer in Children of the Grey's Aftermath, because when I went public, it was like a sort of a relief, because I knew I was going to be in for quite a ride, but I had no idea of what I was going to experience by going public with this. And that's why so many people keep quiet about it. So the growth factor of going public is existential. I mean, it's tremendous, because if you get past and get past the nefarious aspect of, you know, what you believe is nefarious, and understand that as a species, they're doing this for a reason, you know, to me, it's probably a survival reason. And then you look at our own species and what we're doing to each other, number one, to animals, number two, to the planet, number three. I mean, wow, you know, what are we, you know? So you start seeing the world and everything in it a whole different perspective when you've went through these experiences. And in my case, you know, I was just like everybody else when everything was wiped. They did remember the first couple of experiences. I remember telling my mom that about it, and you know, man, she just blew it off, because just like they didn't understand either at that time. My parents didn't, and so it was just like, oh, you know, it's just a little kid, and you know, you making this stuff up, but. There was things that had that she wondered about. She told me at a later time, you know, like there was one of the things that one of the first triggers for me psychologically was watching The Wizard of Oz. And when Dorothy got kidnapped and the flying monkeys reminded me of the Greys, and I went berserk and started screaming and ran out of the room, you know, and my mom thought that was very odd behavior. But now looking back at it, she understands, you know, like what happened. But so there's this the psychological damage is real. And so you kind of, you're angry at the Greys for that. But then, you know, you hear about, you hear stories from the reptilians, like there seems to be different factions of them as well, that, that some people, and I wrote about it in the lady named Mary in the book, you know, in the new book, I included several other people who had abduction experiences with amazing congruencies to mine that's like defies the odds, because it was stuff that I had written about and that was not the usual stuff. And these people came forward to me and I was able to verify their stories. And she had had experiences with reptilians, which have a pretty nasty reputation out there. Yet her experiences was good, you know, so, and, but her experiences with the Greys, not so much. So yeah, I do think it, maybe it's, you know, they're like us, you know, there's good people and there's not so good people. And, with the different agendas, but I do think with the Greys that a lot of what we think, that they do to us, you know, taking us against our will, sexual experiments on us, all the stuff, it's really psychologically damaging at first. And we're like, why are they doing this? You know, because I didn't ask for this. I didn't want this. And nobody in our society wants to accept this. But then as it goes on and you have more and more of these experiences like I did, where it does come to light, because it took me, you know, I was in my early 20s before I started actually remembering anything past these first couple of experiences. And I ended up in therapy. And that's where I had the breakthrough. And even then, I wouldn't tell the therapist what was happening. But once it did, like floodgates opened. But I still don't remember everything. I just remember a lot more than most people. And I think they even know that now. But when that happened, and over the years, I just started to accepting more of what happened to me and quit feeling sorry for myself about it and quit feeling angry and then start drawing in the positives. And that's one of the reasons that I went public. And I want anybody out there that's listening to this, that's had these experiences. I've literally talked to hundreds of people about this that had contacted me privately. I've spent so much of my time trying to help these people. And that was the reason that I decided to go public, because I wanted the public to understand the reality of what's going on, because there's so many people out there that's got famous stories that's had one-time experience, literally one time. I've met and talked to most of them. But in my case, I had a lot more to offer because I had multiple memories. And at first, all I wanted to do was to go out and prove it. I had to prove it to everybody. And now I don't try to prove it anymore. Because at this point in time, I've offered more proof than anybody in history. And if that's not enough for you, then that's on you, not me, you know, because I just wanted to help. I wanted to bring this reality out to people and I wanted it to help people like me. And so I dedicated a lot of stuff in the new book to help others, because how I helped myself and how I evolved and forgave the Greys for what they've done to me. And I think you can draw positives from it, a lot of positives, you know, because of your perspective change, and also because of there's a big spiritual change that happens. And there's also an increased, enhanced psychic awareness that happens to many people. That's not so much if you've been taken once or maybe even twice. And usually it's like a one-time thing and they'll bring you. If you don't have the genetic makeup they're looking for, that's it, you know. But if you're, I started calling it a lifer years ago, and it's kind of stuck throughout the community now. People will say they're lifers. And that's somebody that's pretty much going to be taken for life, because if you're starting to take repeatedly, they're going to keep you for life, you know? So, but those people are the ones that has the chance to grow the most with, their evolution. And I think that has a lot to do with the Grays hybrid program, that they're the evolution of humans as a species is important to the Grays themselves. So they're sort of an intrinsic nature, like in the whole experience. Like the aliens, they seem to need to impose a spiritual evolvement in us, the abductees, as part of their hybrid program. So it seems to be like an integral component, you know, in their program, that they want us, the humans, to evolve the same as what I believe is probably happening with the hybrids themselves. And maybe that's part of the reasons the hybrids are going to be integrating into our society, you know, is to help us evolve. I would like to believe that, you know. So, but when you look at all the different species, they all seem to have different agendas. The reptilians seem to have some not so nice guys out there, and then they have people with pleasant experiences about them. And I think to some degree, the Grays are like that. But, you know, there's people have the insectoids and, you know, I mean, there's just so many different, the Nordics, you know, they seem to be very positive. The people have experience with those. And you've probably ran across that, you know, the different species, and the people have either like the whole Space Brothers thing, as they say, you know, there are Space Brothers and other, you know, I don't know. I don't say that because I don't think we as a species, the human species, has reached that level yet to call anybody a space brother. You know, I think we've got a long way to go, but hopefully that people who's had these experiences can help others evolve. We have to evolve our consciousness. That's all there is to it. We're not going to get there the way we are right now. And so I think that if you look at it, that most of the species that are visiting here and taking us and putting us through these things are doing it as overall good, you know, for the planet.
But I think you say in the book you have sensed a certain degree of desperation amongst them.
Yeah, I think that is it, because they could be a dying race. I don't think they can. I don't think they can breed anymore. You know, their bodies seem to be very atrophied. And I think that's why where the desperation comes in, that they have to create a hybrid program. Because really, if you think about it, there's no other reason that they would be doing it. That, you know, a lot of people, I mean, there's that whole, the whole thing of they're us from the future. I mean, that if you've had these experiences, I don't know. I don't buy into that whatsoever. Because they're physically not even close. I don't know how we could ever evolve into that. But then a lot of people say, well, if they're here to help us, then, you know, what are they waiting for? And, you know, I've even questioned that. You know, it's like, because they have shown me, the Tall Gray has shown me, like, visions, not visions, actual on a monitor, like videos of images and moving videos and stuff of destruction on the earth. They famine and floods and nuclear explosions, like this whole collage of things like that. And I ask him, why are you showing me that? And he wouldn't answer. And then I said, I know you're not going to let this happen. I know this is what's happening now and what could get worse, but I don't believe you're going to let this happen. Because he stopped it, and we walked away from it. So I think that they did that, once again, to test my emotional reaction to it. But the fact that I kind of called them out on it, that I don't believe they're going to let that happen. And I do think that either the Grays or somebody will intervene when we get to that point, that I think our planet's too valuable to them. And also possibly, as far as the Grays go, it has to do with the hybrid program, you know, that I do strongly feel that they're going to integrate here. I don't know if you remember, you know who Brad Steiger is?
Yeah.
So he was a friend of mine, and contributed to the first book. And he believed that the hybrids were already here and integrated into society. So, I mean, he told me this, you know, years ago. And he's a guy that spent his life, you know, studying all aspects of paranormal things and aliens and stuff. And he kind of thought the same thing, I think, that they were here to help us in the long run. So the flip side of that that I pondered is perhaps there's another species of aliens out there that's doing the exact opposite and also creating maybe their own form, or if it's not actually creating a hybrid, you know, where when you start talking implants, it gets real serious, that they're controlling certain humans, you know, to do things. So, you know, there could be, there's a whole nother scenario that's going on outside of what everybody, all of us know about.
So there could be hybrids amongst us who just completely look human. So it sounds like maybe they can just start up relationships with people and then they can have children, and those children will have the hybrid DNA as well as the human DNA. But this is helping the greys in some way, and it helps us. It's just an accidental byproduct.
Well, because they're actually part of the genetics of the greys. So, and maybe that's their desperation. You know, that's the only way they can save their race. Is to transform into a hybrid version between us and them. That's what it seems like to me, because the hybrid program is massive as far as the greys go. I mean, this there are so many people that have been taken. I mean, I've seen estimates that In the States here, you know, like 2-3 million, which seems kind of outrageous to me. But, you know, there's people coming. The more it gets public, the more people come out and talk about it. And then the more people that contact people like me, they always start out, "I've never told anybody this," or "My husband would kill me if he knew I was telling you this," you know, I mean, not figuratively, but, yeah, you know, figure of speech, but that kind of thing, because they've had these experiences and they're too scared to tell anybody about it for the retribution. You know, it's like, wow, you know, I know people think I'm crazy or whatever. And that's why I tried to represent that to these people, to like, look, you know, I came out, had these memories, and I'm going to tell you that you're not alone, that this happens to people from all walks of life. I mean, there's famous people that would shock that I've been told about, and definitely know for sure that have been had these experiences, but they certainly wouldn't want to risk their career by coming out talking about it. But it's all walks of life. I mean, as far as the grays go, they don't discriminate. You know, if you've got the genetic makeup, that's all they care about. They don't care what your walk in life is. But that's why I tried so hard to prove it, and I went through so many things to prove my case. So the skeptics, I wanted to silence the skeptics, because to help not only me but everybody else to feel more comfortable to come out, you know, to have this more accepted, because it's a massive phenomenon, you know, and that's why the governments of the world go to such extremes to cover it up. But I mean, I've taken, I've had these unexplainable scars on my body. That was one of the first things that I came out with. And I remember being at a dermatologist one time. I had my shirt off, and he says, "When did you have back surgery?" And I said, "I've never had back surgery." And he's like very stumped by that. And he had, because there was scars on my spine. And he says, "Oh, you got surgical scars back here." I'm like, "Trust me, I've never had back surgery." And in fact, at that time, I never had any surgery. And since then, I've had about, I've lost count, 6 or 7, 8 doctors, different doctors, look at the scars and there's a puncture marks on the side of my rib cage. They can't explain any of it. I've taken a special blood test. The last time that I did it was maybe about 10 years ago. And it was, I had a new doctor, and she was a female doctor, and I showed her, and she was real puzzled. And she goes, well, there's a disease out there that can cause strange scarring on people. And she goes, I can test you for that. And I'm like, yeah, okay. You know, so she took a special blood test for it. And she called me a couple days later, and she's like, yeah, you don't have that disease. And I says, well, can you explain how I got these scars? And she goes, you know, I really can't. She goes, I showed the pictures of it and talked to another physician here in the clinic, and he couldn't explain it either. See, no doctor wants to touch it. And then, you know, I was taken with another witness, which I actually wrote about in both books, because after going through a regression, I learned more about it. But they took the fetus from her, and they took me along to witness it, so that once again, to see my emotional reaction to it. And she's come out publicly, even made television appearances, separate from me, because we're not together anymore and haven't been for a very, very long time. And she still remembers it. I remember filming a show out in Las Vegas, and they interviewed me about it. And then they went and interviewed her separately, and the producer came back, and I said, how did it go? You know, and said her story was back to your story up verbatim, you know, and exactly. And so she's done that several times, you know. So there was another taken with another witness, you know, that's had this profound experience that we both remember, and you know, they let us remember it, and it's made an emotional impact on both of us. And then I passed a polygraph. I did a series. I was filming a series that actually got stopped, but for the people of Prometheus Productions, who's the people that does Ancient Aliens, because I'd made a few appearances on here, they decided they wanted to do their own series with me. And one of the things that they did, the series was, it was going to be me. There was a guy that was a sort of a skeptic guy. It was the other sidekick. But I was going to go around the country and interview people, and we'd talk about their cases, and we were going to submit them to all these things to prove their case. Well, I wasn't going to do it. I wasn't going to do the series unless I submitted to the test myself, you know, so, because I wasn't going to go around asking people to take these to prove your case, you know, if I didn't do it myself. So, and we did a lot of stuff. I mean, they had, there was a Dr. Judy Blume in Los Angeles that we did the regression with, and it was filmed, and it was very emotional. And one of the things that came back in my regression with her was the incident with the fetus being taken with the other witness. And I had always blamed myself for that. And felt guilty, like if this person was never with me, this probably wouldn't have happened to her and all that kind of thing. And then during the regression, that was one of the things that came up, and it was really emotional. And I didn't know it at the time, but, you know, I guess I was just like crying through it. I didn't even realize it till after they brought me up, and this was being filmed. I mean, this was like, you know, they had cameras set up all over the place, a big film crew there and everything. So it was not the best scenario for a regression, but it worked. And during that, they set me up with a former White House detail, Secret Service guy who had retired, presidential detail, named Joseph Paola, and he was a polygraph examiner. So they brought in like these top people. And once again, I was filmed and taken a polygraph and passed. And then on top of that, they submitted me, have you ever heard of a QEEG brain scan?
No, not QEEG.
That is a special kind of a brain scan that it measures electrical brain activity, and it measures like the level and the location of the brain activity. And so it can indicate, like, when they ask you something, then certain sections of your brain, your neurons will fire in that section of the brain. So there's different lobes of your brain that has their own job to do, basically. And what they brought in and this neuroscientist that's a professor at UCLA in California. His name's Dr. Dario Nardi. He's a PhD. He's wrote books. You're very, very qualified. And they brought him in when I was filming this series to do a qEEG brain scan on me. And they did, and there was once again, big film crew there, all these people standing around and everything. And he wanted to get like a baseline scan before we started. So it was kind of difficult to do because of all these people there and cameras and, you know, and so I asked for a few minutes to, I've always meditated. That's been one of my coping mechanisms for all this. And I asked to meditate, and I did for just really only like 5 or 6 minutes. And I heard him say, okay, you know, and he goes, wow, you know, you got your brain very calm. And he says, well, let's start then. And they started asking me a series of questions about my experiences. And then from those questions, they could ascertain whether my answers were coming from the section of the brain that deals with creativity, which means I was making up the answers, basically lying, or if it would stem from neurons, the sections of my brain, subconscious memory. And when they did, it showed that the whole interview, that everything was coming from the section of my brain that has to do with memory, that I wasn't making it up. And not only did it come from memory, it was lighting up the section of my brain that has to do with emotion. There was an emotional attachment to the memory. So they were kind of blown away by all that. And then the film, the series mysteriously gets dropped, which is a whole nother subject. But, you know, the powers that be that garnered a lot of attention. So they stopped the series, even though I had two networks were going to pick it up. And then Prometheus called me up a few months later, and they said, we'd like you to be a guest again on Ancient Aliens, but would you be willing? We want you to take another qEEG brain scan. And I was like, well, you have the film of the first one. Why don't you just use that? And they're like, no, we want you to do it again. And I thought it was kind of mysterious. You know, I was like, okay, you know, if you want, I'll do it again. But it kind of raised a red flag with me because I thought it was very odd because they owned the rights to, you know, they already filmed it. You know, why don't you just use that? So I agreed to come out, and I live on the other side. I live in the Gulf Coast, so it's a long plane ride to California. I agreed to do it, and when I got there, it was a long flight, layover. I get there, and then I have to ride another hour and a half to the location. And Nick Pope was there, and he was going to be the one that was going to be asking me the questions this time. And they had Dr. Nardi again. They had the neuroscientist that was going to do the brain scan. So they wired me up again. And this time Nick was like sitting like 2 feet in front of me. And he was asking me a different series of questions. And after it was over, and of course, it was all being filmed again. This time it did air. It was on an episode of Ancient Aliens called, in season 13, I think it was episode 9. It was called The Taken. So if anybody ever wants to go back and see that, you can see parts of it on there. They, Dr. Nardi just immediately turned around and he showed me his computer. And he's like, you passed again. He said, you know, it was very clear that your answers to these questions were coming from your memory. You know, they were true. And you said, once again, there was the lobe of your brain that deals with emotions was attached to it. So they then asked me to come back out just a couple of weeks later to appear at a big conference out there called AlienCon in Pasadena, California. And when I did, it turned out they'd put me in like the largest hall of this whole campus that we were on. And I mean, it was like literally like 3,000 to 4,000 people there. So, and they put me like in the middle of the panel and like the feature person and all this kind of thing. And I thought, wow, you know, this is a pretty good treatment for an abductee, because most of the time in the UFO field, we're kind of like the ugly stepsister, so to speak. You know, it's just like, I don't think abductees get the respect in the field that they deserve. And it went really, really well. And so much so, they and had a second one, and then it drew even more people to the second one. And they were very pleased with it. And we're going to have me do an East Coast one as well. And they went ahead and aired that episode. And after that, you know, that gets to the point where it's the amount of proof that's beyond anything that anybody's ever done. I got on the radar of, I don't know how to say it, you know, like the black op people. I'll just say it like that. And because I guess, you know, when you come out with a story like mine, and then you offer that kind of proof that's indisputable, then they kind of wanted me quiet. So they showed up in their black SUVs. You know, they've showed up here twice at my house, and the first time basically insinuating my, you know, threatening my life. So after that, it really got my attention, and I started wondering if this was all worth it or not, because I was very puzzled by that, because I've kind of always said that I haven't believed that we're really 100% ready for disclosure yet, and that people like me was kind of helping that aspect of our government. I don't even want to say government, because I don't believe it's actually government, but out, you know, because we're sort of slow drip acclimation. You know, it's like, well, you got a guy like me, I'm out here telling this, that it's happening, and showing the reality of it and the scale of the reality. And I've proved it more than anybody ever has. So I'm actually helping you people out. You know, that's the way I'm looking at it. Like I'm slow dip acclimation. And I still look at it like that. And I don't think we're as a society on this planet ready yet for an alien going, no matter what country you're in, to, you know, show up with your political leaders, and, you know, you've got a gray at the table and, you know, taking questions. And it's just, I think it'll be a financial upheaval, and I just think we're just not ready for it, mostly because of the religious aspect of it. Because the minute somebody says to a gray, what's the true religion on earth, or what's your religion, or, you know, blah, blah. And if he says you're all wrong, or something to that effect, or whatever, you know, if it's not what somebody wants to hear, wow. I mean, it could be a massive religious upheaval and create chaos like everywhere. So we have to slowly acclimate to it. And it goes back to what I was saying previously, like our level of consciousness has to get more advanced. And so we're ready to accept this, to be like part of this whole, you know, galactic brotherhood, so to speak. That's the reason I quit speaking for almost 3 years. I turned down interview after interview because, you know, I mean, I sleep to the, well, I actually still do, you know, I have a gun in my drawer, you know, next to the bed, and I know how to use it. But still, there's, you know, lots of ways they can take you out if they want to. But I still felt very strongly when I finished the second book, like I need to get the rest of the story out. People need to know this. And I tried to cover every aspect I could think of in this book, as well as sharing other people's stories that's not often told in this book, because I felt it that important. And I actually kind of think that going public again and starting to do interviews again, kind of protects me in a way, because if anything does happen to me, then they'll know 100%, you know, that who it was. So I, you know, I feel a little uneasy about it, but I do feel it's very important.
And you say in your book that the abductions have not stopped and the experiences have shifted to include new locations and new species. So what are these new locations and species?
Well, one of the new things that I experienced was something, an underwater base, which had never happened before. And that was actually a pretty terrifying experience. I try my best on these experiences when I do know that it's happening and remember that it's happening, to not exhibit fear. And so I don't want to give them that pleasure, you know, like, okay, look, it's kind of the hope, like they'd be tired of me by now, like all these years and years of this happening. I mean, it's not like it happens like every week or something like that. People think that it's not like that at all. Sometimes it can go a couple of years and nothing happens, or you don't remember it, one of the two, but there's nothing major enough that sticks in your head, you know. But then they can go in spurts where it might happen two or three times in a month. There's just no rhyme or reason to it. And so in this particular experience, it was very different. And it was something I had trouble controlling my fear, because they had taken me and escorted me down to a very small craft. And there was like two humans, which they had these human clones that I've seen numerous times. They have to be clones. They look, they all look the same, medium height, medium build, short dark hair. And piloting this small craft, and there was these like tube things on each side of it. And I mean, it wasn't, I mean, I'm talking something that was like the size of a fishing boat or something. I mean, it wasn't very big. And they had other humans placed in these clear glass tubes, and they put me on one. There was one on top, and they closed it up, and it was kind of like claustrophobic, you know, like, I'm like, is there air in here? I'm going to suffocate. And where are we going? This is way, way different. And then the next thing I knew, this thing took off, and I saw all these bubbles coming in the window above my glass container. There was some sort of like little window panel there. And then it was almost like waterboarding or something. So I kind of remind, you know, I thought I was going to drown or something, even though the water wasn't hitting me, but it was sort of the psychological part of it. And we ended up in this undersea base, which, oddly enough, there's more and more reports now that people are starting to come out. I think because all these the new acronym UAPs that's coming in and out of the sea, people have seen, and pilots and stuff here in our military have seen, and so they're starting to go, wow, you know, there's good possibilities of underwater undersea bases. But I had never experienced that until this. And I was escorted by a tall gray, and we went down this hallway, and we came into this section that was lurked. It was sort of like a half moon dome. There was beams and stuff, but there was a lot of, I'm not going to say glass, because it would have busted the pressure of the sea, but some kind of glass-like material that you could see through. And we stopped, we came to that area, and we stopped, and there was just loads of like equipment, like this really high-tech equipment down there. And there was this thing sort of in the middle of this room, and it was a rather large room, that was like this octagon shape, and it was almost like an energy source. Like, it looked like energy, like a static, like light kind of thing. And I could clearly see that through this glass that we were underwater on the seafloor. And so that was like very unusual. And in fact, the tall gray, even he telepathically through my mind showed me like what this octagon thing was. And when I was looking into this light forces that was this thing was creating, I saw CHI, chi, energy. You know, like that was his way of telling me that was an energy source. So that was like a very unusual location to be taken. And it was a first for me, you know, underwater base. So I firmly believe that there's parts of the ocean that they're using for that. And maybe that's where all these UAPs are starting to come from, because they're going in and out of the sea.
Well, it's been great talking to you. The book's called Children of the Grey's Aftermath. People can get that on Amazon, can't they?
Yeah. Yep. It's on Amazon. You can just look it up on Amazon. I got links to both Children of the Grey's and Children of the Grey's Aftermath on my website. It's real pretty easy to find.
And what's your web address?
It's Brett, B-R-E-T, Oldham.com.
Well, that's great. Nice and simple. Well, thanks again for coming on the podcast.
Thank you, Simon. I really enjoyed it. Appreciate you having me.
That was an interview with Brett Oldham about his book, Children of the Grey's Aftermath. A great way to support the podcast is to sign up to Patreon, where you can get exclusive access to the extended version of this episode. Just go to patreon.com/AlienUFOPodcast. When you sign up, you get access to the episodes in the back catalogue. They are ad-free and are released 2 days before the free versions. And if you want to try out the extended episodes, you can get a 7-day free trial. And please check out my book. It's called Verified Near-Death Experiences, and it's on Amazon. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave a review and be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or via your favourite podcast app to make sure that you don't miss out on any episodes. And thanks for listening.